Welcome to Civics and Coffee. My name is Alicia, and I am a self-professed history nerd. Each week, I'm going to chat about a topic on U.S. history and give you both the highlights and occasionally break down some of the complexities in history and share stories you may not remember learning in high school, all in the time it takes to enjoy a cup of coffee. Welcome back, everybody. Well, it's here. Today is the day we're going to dive into the American Revolution. Well, kinda. I'm going to take a bit of a different approach today. I am not, nor will I ever be, a good war historian. You could spend hours dissecting the various battles and individuals involved, and that just is not my strength. What I thought I would do is talk a little bit about the basics, major developments in individuals, and discuss its overall impact to the development of a new nation, and the impact to the residents. All of them. Have your coffee? Good. Alright, let's start with the answers to the quizzes you had in high school, shall we? The American Revolution took place between 1775 and 1783, and was a campaign of the 13 colonies against Great Britain in a quest for independence. The war officially began on the evening of April 18, 1775, when the shot heard round the world was fired in Lexington and Concord. British troops were in Concord to secure an arsenal of ammunition. Hearing an offensive may take place, the colonists deployed Minutemen, or members of a militia to be called upon at a moment's notice, to prevent the troops from capturing the supplies. Chaos quickly ensued and shots were fired. 8 Americans were dead, and the war was officially on. The British Army outmatched the Continental Militia in just about every way possible. They were better trained, more regimented, and organized than Washington's ragtag group. Literally, Washington was pulling rural farmers and undisciplined merchants who had no prior military experience into the calls for battle. In terms of allies, the Brits had Germans and Native Americans fighting for their side, with the Germans being a particularly harsh group acting as mercenaries for Britain. The colonies went in alone initially, eventually securing a much-needed alliance with France in February of 1778 and Spain in 1779. So on paper, there is no frickin' way the colonies are going to win against the mightiest military power in the world. What the colonists did have on their side was home field advantage. British soldiers were unfamiliar with the various swamps, harbors, and hillsides where many of the key battles would take place. Now on to some of the major events for your chronology. On June 15, 1775, at the convening of the Second Continental Congress, the focus was on raising funds and men for the army. John Adams would nominate George Washington to be the first commander-in-chief, in a move seen to unite the South and the North. In September 1776, the American soldier Nathan Hale is hung for being a spy in Long Island. He would be the first, but not the last, intelligence agent of the Revolution. In September and October 1777, the Battle of Saratoga is fought. This is the turning point for the Americans, who secure a decisive victory when British commanders surrender on October 7th. It is this victory that prompts France to officially back the cause of the colonists, although they've been secretly supplying them for about a year. In September 1779, Congress appoints John Adams to negotiate peace with England, but peace would still be another 4 years away. A number of mutinies occurred within the Continental Army. One said mutiny in New Jersey in 1781 led to the trial of 3 instigators, with 2 individuals being shot by a firing squad. Washington was a cold dude, remarking the deaths of the soldiers were meant to be an example. I mean, here is a commander who is struggling to fill his troop numbers and up and shoots 2 men to serve as an example? Harsh. On October 19, 1781, the British surrender at Yorktown, ending the land war within the colonies. On February 27, 1782, the House of Commons votes against continuing the war with America. They are interested in securing peace. They are officially over it. On February 4, 1783, Great Britain formally declares an end to the hostilities with the United States, and the Treaty of Paris is signed on September 3, 1783. The American Revolution is over. Obviously, I am skimming over some major hurdles and battles fought during the Revolution. I know this, man! There are whole volumes dedicated to Washington's ragtag army, the Culper spy ring, Valley Forge, and so on. Definitely go check them out if you're interested. But now that I've gotten some of the facts out of the way, let's dive into the impacts and struggles. What did the revolution mean for Black Americans, the poor, Native Americans, women? This war was meant to be a fight for liberty, right? Highlighted in the preamble of the Declaration of Independence. Quote, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." End quote. Of course, by men, they meant white property-owning men. Native Americans were not included in the development of this rejection of tyranny. There were also compromises made on whether to confront the ills of slavery, so Black Americans were also excluded. And don't even get me started on the exclusion of women. Great Britain took notice of the hypocrisy coming across the Atlantic. In a political satirical essay, Samuel Johnson wrote, quote, "How is it that we hear the loudest yelps for liberty among the drivers of Negroes?" End quote. And while Britain was still another 30 years off from outlawing slavery themselves, they promised freedom to American slaves who took on the cause for the crown. The South was unwilling to even consider ending slavery and elevating Black Americans into the political conversation. Since slaves continued to make up a larger portion of the population than that of the white landowners, there was a fear that arming Black slaves would lead to slave revolts. Realizing the British were focused on taking southern cities and struggling to maintain the necessary troops to combat the mighty army, Congress introduced a resolution proposing the drafting of 3,000 slaves and to grant their freedom as payment. Hearing this, South Carolina heartily rejected it while claiming offense. Without the needed reinforcements, Charleston would be lost to the crown in May of 1780. During the Revolution, 1 in 5 slaves left their bonds for a chance of freedom by fighting with the British. Lord Dunmore issued a proclamation early in the war, in November of 1775, offering freedom to any slave who fought on behalf of the crown. Many who attempted to join the British were caught, including a 15-year-old girl who was given 80 lashes, and then, as if she wasn't in enough pain, hot embers were poured into her wounds. Disgusting. The Continental Army struggled throughout the conflict to maintain order, troop levels, and morale. While the call for war came from the wealthy elite, they were not willing to pick up a musket. As a result, the Continental Army had to devise creative methods to gain men willing to serve. In one attempt to increase troops, tenant farmers were promised parcels in exchange for their military service. Unfortunately, while some did get deeds to the confiscated estates of former loyalists, much of the promised land went to wealthy merchants who were friendly with the political elite. And what about the Native American men and women who held the proper claim to the land patriots were now trying to dominate? The Native Americans fought on both the British and the colonist side, leading to a civil war within many a tribal nation, including the Iroquois, who would see a split between young and old, the younger leaders leaning towards the British, and the elders towards the colonists. Of course, the natives were not fighting for the crown or for the colonists, but for their own land and sovereignty. Ultimately, the colonists would see the natives as supporters of the crown and would expand westward, taking land by treaty and by force. Unfortunately, for the indigenous Americans, the atrocities and betrayals are just beginning. Lastly, what about the ladies? What did the revolution mean for them? Women, of course, were considered an afterthought. They were excluded from mention in the Declaration of Independence, although they had spilled blood in the fight for independence just like the men. One example of women kicking ass in combat is Deborah Sampson, who dressed as a man to join the Patriots on the battlefield. In 1782, Sampson disguised herself as a man named Robert Shurtleff, the name of her deceased brother, and joined the 4th Massachusetts Regiment. She participated in battles, including one where she had direct confrontation with Tories and suffered a bullet wound to the thigh. Being the badass boss that she was, Sampson removed the bullet herself to evade detection. Sampson's true sex was eventually learned, and she was honorably discharged on October 23, 1783. Sampson is the only female to receive a military pension for her service during the Revolution. So, unfortunately, the American Revolution is more of a revolution of ideas rather than of action. The colonies went from a group of white, powerful, rich men deciding their fates to a country where, you guessed right, rich, white, powerful men decided people's fates. But why is it that the United States was even successful in the war? Why wasn't Britain able to just squash the rebellious colonies and exert their dominance? This was the mightiest navy on Earth, no? Well, a few things were at play throughout the conflict. The British were thousands of miles away from a supply line. And of course, this was before things like airplanes, so supplies were weeks, sometimes months, from being fulfilled. Secondly, America was a fragmented nation, which meant there was no clearly identifiable target that would equate to victory. This was very different from many of the European campaigns, where the seizing of Paris, for example, would easily equate to a British victory. Third, British soldiers were being led by a conservative general who hesitated in taking decisive action, worried about the loss of troops. There were many instances General William Howe had as an opportunity to secure a decisive victory and stamp out the teeny tiny unruly army of the colonists. However, he'd be stuck in the worry for the losses of his own troops and would fail to take decisive action. And lastly, British troops were spread throughout the globe. Great Britain was involved in conflicts throughout the world, and therefore were unable to focus on the uprising of the colonies. And honestly, who would blame them? Who could think that the rebellious farmers in the colony across the Atlantic would prove to be so defiant and devout in their quest for independence? All of this is to say that America did not so much as win the war, as Britain just decided the fight was just not worth the investment of resources and time. Instead, the Crown focused on maintaining their control of the Caribbean, where the lucrative sugar trade would yield more in revenue than the taxes they were unsuccessfully levying on the colonies. So what did the colonists get, aside from independence, in winning the American Revolution? Land, for one. With the signing of the Treaty of Paris, the United States would now mean everything from the Atlantic west to the Mississippi River, excluding New Orleans and the Floridas, which went back under the control of the Spaniards. The American northern border reached to the Great Lakes and along the frontiers of Quebec. They also won the right to develop their own government, an experiment in democracy not yet tried. And while not perfect, the coming Constitution would establish a new method of self-government never before seen in the world. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed this episode of Civics and Coffee. If you want to hear more small snippets from American history, be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for joining me, and I look forward to our next cup of coffee together.